I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome to Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast. I'm Ben Eshmade, and let's enter once again our archive and encounter some timeless music. Assembled through improvisation, editing and sound collage, let's explore the legacy of Can.
Nobody's really actually managed to sound like Can.
We didn't sell millions. We were not a hit group. We were always something avant-garde, something very strange.
The main challenge to find ways of make the orchestral instruments groove like a drum set.
In April 2017, the Can project came to the Barbican Hall, in the first half of which you could have seen and heard the might of the London Symphony Orchestra performing a new arrangement built on the band's legacy entitled Can Dialogue, written by one of the group's founders, Ermin Schmidt, in collaboration with composer Grigor Schwellenbach. After the interval, the journey in music continued with musician Thurston Moore leading a supergroup which included original Can singer Malcolm Mooney. They explored Can's immense catalogue of songs and albums. So, to the interviews. To set the scene, I first spoke to writer Rob Young, who had then just completed the biography All Gates Open, The Story of Can. The voice after that you'll hear will be that of Can founder Ermin Schmidt. And lastly, we'll be joined by his collaborator, as mentioned on Can Dialogue, Grigor Schwellenbach. So first, for some background from writer Rob Young.
For me, as a starting point to the biography, I was really fascinated by the actual first meeting of this group in an apartment in Cologne, June 1968. And that's, you know, of course, a month after the great riots in Paris, for example. There's very much a sense of turmoil and revolution in the air in Europe anyway. And in this apartment belonging to Ermin Schmidt, basically had this kind of people who'd been on different journeys through music, suddenly kind of just kind of crunching together at this point. I mean, Ermin Schmidt himself had trained as a pianist and was also working as in the classical world and was also very well employed as a conductor, an orchestral conductor. And along with that, you had a guy called Holger Schukai, who had been born in an area kind of between Germany and Poland, very contested zone, Danzig, which was basically invaded during the war. He and his family had to escape from there and ended up in Berlin. And Holger had also trained as a composer over the course of the 60s and was interested in composing his own avant-garde music and was working in Stockhausen's electronic music studio in Cologne. And Jackie Lieberseit, who's the drummer, had come completely differently through the route of jazz. He was a really successful jazz drummer who'd lived for a while in Barcelona, accompanying people like Chet Baker and other jazz musicians passing through, and had worked with one of Germany's great free jazz players, Manfred Schuff, in a band in the mid-60s. He was just basically playing totally free jazz drumming.
I knew Holger from the Stockhausen courses. And when I had the idea to form a group, I wrote him a letter and asked him what he thinks about joining. So Holger then was quite excited about the idea, and he said, I had a pupil in Switzerland, a young beat guitarist, who would love to join too. So we had a meeting then at my house. And before I had asked Jackie if he knows a drummer who would love to join a group. And he said, yeah, I'll find you something. The day I had arranged it. And Tricky showed up and I said, well, what about the drummer? And he said, it's me. And I said, well, you are in the Shroff group. Yeah, but I don't want to be any longer there. It doesn't interest me anymore. I want to do something new. And that's how we came together. And in the beginning, and then Hildegard met Malcolm Mooney at Serge's in Paris. And he was a painter. And so Hildegard said to Malcolm, why don't you come to Cologne? Maybe Ermin can introduce you into the gallery scene. And so I said to Malcolm, well, why don't you come with me to the studio and look? And he just spontaneously started singing. There we had the singer. It was a wonderful moment. He started to sing, and Jackie and Malcolm was a rhythm unit from the first second on.
And with you, mother screams, I am mother, woman screams, I am fertile, and the father.
The idea was to have what then actually happened, to have musicians. That was my idea, from classical contemporary music, from jazz. So to bring it all together and find out actually what will happen. I had nobody had an idea how it should develop, what it should become, what we all said we will invent it all together. The only thing was we decided there is no hierarchy, there is no band leader. There is no composer, single composer. The group and everybody has the same rights, the same function, the same is part of the composer, which is the group.
So you have all these people colliding together at this moment and really wanting to make something new and wanting to escape from the kind of genres that they've been trained in for so long. And basically they wanted to rock, you know, that moment. They wanted to go beyond any sort of academic avant-garde constraints and actually, you know, do the kind of things they were hearing from the Velvet Underground, Jimi Hendrix, these kind of figures. So it's really a great moment, that birth point.
Why do you think it worked? I mean, as you said, in theory it shouldn't have done. I mean, they were all pushing and pulling musically in different directions.
Well, that's $1 million question, isn't it? I mean, it was just there'd always been a good chemistry between these people. The success of Can, it's I think partly due to the extraordinary personalities that combined in the group. It's also a testament to their amazing instrumental virtuosity. And at the same time, they were discovering technology, recording technology. All their stuff was self-recorded. One important factor was that they were very much in control of their own production. They never went to professional studios to record their stuff. They were lucky enough to be given a space to rehearse in a castle outside Cologne. A quite wealthy art collector had just leased this old castle building, wanted to make it a commune for artists. So they moved in there and basically installed themselves space that they could use 24 hours a day to rehearse in, to set up a recording studio. And so out of that, they developed this way of recording themselves on a really simple two-track reel-to-reel recording. But they got some incredible results out of that. So that was another factor, I think, in in kind of how they turned out at that time.
I rather like to use technology totally against its idea, how it was constructed. All the electronic devices at the time I used always against the actual idea it was built. Later too, all of the synthesizers, I rather deconstructed their the idea of it. So, but of course it had. I mean, we created then in with the years, we developed quite a sophisticated electronic sounds too. Besides, you know, pure acoustic drum and guitar sounds and organ sounds. But we had all. I had later, pretty soon, 71. I had a synthesizer which was the Alpha 77, get quite known because it was specially built for me, and it was built after my ideas but I never would have been able to construct it, but there was an electronic engineer who developed it, but it was me who gave him the idea how it should function, and so I'm of course there. Electronics are one of the very important columns, elements of contemporary music, and it was one of ours too.
A big part of the recorded sound was editing. So a lot of what you hear on the records is actually lots and lots of different long tapes that are collaged together. I mean, mostly in ways that you can't really hear the join. You know, they really embraced that, the idea of, you know, creating the ideal take by, you know, cutting up tapes and re-editing them. And that was, in a way, the source of one of the big tensions within the band. Some people were very much in favor of doing that. Some of them actually would prefer to just play the thing and get it right first time. So, you know, it's a band that also thrived on conflict as well.
Well, already Can was a collage of people of totally different musical life backgrounds. So, in a way, already Can was a collage. Collage was very much my idea anyway, because, I mean, being also in the art scene, collage was a very important element of 20th century art here. Also literature. Think about Burroughs, for example. It was a very important element for me, for Holger too, less for Jackie, who was a jazz musician. I mean, he wanted to play. This kind of editing was not so much his thing. But, I mean, it was part of our of the way we put music together.
You could also say they reinvented themselves each album. I mean, there are sort of many variations in Can, especially as different people came and went.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, you can definitely really notice the evolution. It's almost year by year. I mean, for me, it's just a great run of material between 1968 and about 1975. And they split up in 1978. But yeah, you know, they were evolving really rapidly in those early years. Definitely the character of the music changes with, for example, there's a big change of vocalist. I mean, after just over a year, Malcolm Mooney left the band. He kind of had a nervous breakdown, had to go back to America. Not so long after that, they happened to just stumble on a Japanese busker in Munich called Damo Suzuki, and just really invited him to be their vocalist practically, you know, there on the spot. And he very much characterized Can's kind of golden few years as well. From, you know, they evolved also with technology as well. They brought in more and more innovations with the way that the effects they used on their instrument, the recording technology kind of gradually, you know, they sort of added more and more.
You've talked about how everything came together in the studio. Did they perform live during their time?
Yeah, I probably played that down really in what we've been talking about, but I mean, they I mean, it's important also to remember that what you hear on the albums is really one tiny sort of element of what Can did. Yes, they did play live loads right from the beginning. Basically, most of their live appearances were around Germany, also in France, where they were actually really popular and very critically acclaimed, and Britain. And they did several big tours of the UK, almost like, you know, in the country for a whole month at a time, doing a lot of, lots of tours in Germany, festivals there. So yes, they were absolutely a very intensely working live group. Can Live there's a whole other dimension there, which we've lost in time, obviously. But it was an important part of their lifespan for sure.
So we were very successful, but first in Britain and France, and then it became in Germany. But then we made the title song for a 3 or 4 film serial in television, and the title song became high in the chart, and we had a hit in Germany. I mean, we didn't sell millions. We were not a hit group. We were always something avant-garde, something very strange, and had a certain public. But as such, we were successful. I was always, even as a very small kid, I was always fascinated by sound, by noise, and it took me a long time until I was 20, 23, until I realized my fascination by noise is part of my musical world. So, one of the reasons I understood was when I heard Stockhausen's Gesang der Jünglinge. When I heard this Gesang der Jünglinge, I think I hadn't yet started studying music, or maybe just I had, I don't know exactly. I decided this I want to understand. So I first studied conducting, and then later in 1964 I went to Cologne and started studying with Stockhausen. On the music academy, while I was studying composition, I also had less composition lessons with Ligeti already, and I met Cage. I mean, these are the three, as composers, which had the biggest influence on me, Ligeti and Cage and Stockhausen. They were totally different from each other. Cage was wonderful and sort of, he was very free and very, all the rules of serialism and composition, which meant so much to Stockhausen, didn't mean much to Cage. So I was in between all that, which was wonderful because three completely different.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Different influences.
Have you enjoyed working with Gregor on the orchestral work? What were your ambitions for this piece?
Yes, very much so. Very much so.
The first thing that was very, very clear for both of us, we mustn't do some medley best of thing. The first talks were, how can we do this? What I did was I wrote a lot of orchestrations of Can songs or parts of Can songs that we all did not use. It was just to get into the flow and to collect some experiences in how can you use those motifs in an orchestral work.
I always like new adventures. So going back to the orchestra, to symphony orchestra in Barbican Hall, I conduct this piece with the Can quotations, the Can dialogue piece, but also in a concert version suite of my ballet. The Barbican pieces are really meant to only be performed by orchestra without any electronics. So I decided we won't use even much percussion, but having a real, like a classic 19th century orchestra and doing something different with it.
We didn't want to try and make the orchestra sound like a rock band. We wanted to keep of an orchestra, but use the spirit and the structure of Can songs, but not the sounds. Maybe that was the main challenge to find ways of make the orchestral instruments groove like a drum set.
You mentioned at the beginning Dockhausen, Ligeti and Cage. Will we hear echoes or reverberations of their music perhaps within that?
Well, I don't know. But of course, yeah, there is. I mean, you always refer to something. You always are influenced. You never create out of the void. So these three for me are very important. For Gregor, for example, the music of Steve Reich and John Adams, Terry Riley, for instance, is very important. So you will hear my and his, who is much younger. I mean, he could be my son. Everything which happened in our life is absorbed somehow. But I don't think you definitely will recognize. I mean, this is all these influences which, of course, form the mind of a composer. And my music is the sum of my musical experiences, of my adventures I was looking for, and I had, of my beginning from my studies, even from my childhood, when I was incredibly fascinated by noises. I was really, as a kid, I was fascinated by noises. When I was 4 years old, opposite to our apartment, there was a doctor. There was a doorway with gravel, and when his car went in and out, I was on the balcony and was totally fascinated by the sound of the tires on the gravel. So all this, of course, is part of your experiences. Actually, Faber and Faber, the publisher, is planning to release this big book about Can, and the second part I'm editing and parts of it writing myself. And one day I interviewed Thurston for the book. After the interview, Thurston said, well, listen, I have a commission doing a concert with an experimental film behind the scene. Would you like to play with me? It was in the Louvre in Paris. So, of course, I said yes. So we made that concert just by working so closely together. Actually, we didn't even rehearse for it. And since this kind of spontaneity, which I like so much, and anyway, I like Sonic Youth, we just asked if he would like to sort of curate the second part of the Barbican concert. And, well, he accepted. And we never discussed what, because that's him. He curates it. And of course, the plan was that as many Can musicians which could possibly take part in this would play with him. But unfortunately, it will be only Malcolm because Jackie died, Holger is sick. Well, I'm doing my part, and unfortunately, Jackie won't be with us anymore, which is the saddest thing which has happened to me in the last 20 years. I'm still, I can't talk about it.
When I saw Skazarev, when I saw Skazarev, when I saw Skazarev,
the legacy of the band. I think there's a certain argument that they're more successful now than they've ever been. I'm hearing their music everywhere.
It's true, isn't it? I mean, especially it's really cropping up in a lot of movies and occasionally in TV series. And yes, possibly. They've managed to keep their catalogue alive. I mean, they still run their own label and publishing operation. You know, every member gets a royalty check every month. Yeah, I mean, people like, Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead, when he's done some music editing work for some of various movies, he often seems to slip a Can track or two in there. I think there was a track on the recent High Rise movie by Ben Wheatley. I think it's partly they haven't dated in a way that a lot of music has. There's something about the combination of sounds that has managed to stay fresh. Obviously, the Can and a lot of the other German rock bands from the 70s, there's been a lot of interest in them over the last sort of 10, 15 years or so, you know, in the States and Britain and Europe. I think a lot of younger listeners have been turning onto them again. They've been quite creative with the back catalogue. They've released remix albums and repackaged the stuff. They've had quite interesting champions. I mean, yeah, James Murphy from LCD Sound System was nearly always photographed in a Future Days t-shirt, you know, when the height of that band success. And I think, you know, the sound of LCD Sound System owes masses to Can as one example. But, you know, nobody's really actually managed to sound like Can. They're one of those bands lots of people claim to love, lots of musicians love. And I can't tell you how many press releases I've read which refer to, you know, a band sounding like Can. But nobody actually really manages to sound exactly like Can to my ears. But they're certainly an important touchstone for a lot of people.
When you decide to become a composer, a musician, of course you want that it's played, that people listen to it, and that you get a public which likes it. If that happens, and it happened with Can, yes, yeah, you are quite satisfied that, you know, happy that the music you make found people like it. Sometimes, for certain moments, all of a sudden you are proud. It doesn't last very long. Most of the time you think about what you are just doing, and most of the time before you are unsatisfied with it and you work on it and you don't think about legacy and being proud, just think about the work you have to do.
Thanks to Ermin, Grigor and Rob for speaking to us. As many will know, sadly, Holger Zucchi passed away in late 2017, making Ermin's comments about him more poignant. I think anyone who managed to get a ticket felt very lucky to be in the audience that evening to celebrate the evergreen importance of this band's music. Do discover or rediscover Can. I'm Ben Eshmaid. Thanks for listening to this archive edition of Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast, here to inspire more people to discover and love the arts with weekly episodes of archive finds and theme series. Subscribe to Nothing Concrete on Acast, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. And if you can, leave us a review to help us get the word out.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.